Our star guest today has been a fixture in theatre and on television here in the UK for over five decades. Her musical repertoire has included the original production of Godspell in 1971 and Madame Thénardier in Les Mis in the late 1980s, where actually our paths first crossed. Admittedly, that was me waiting outside the stage door for her autograph. On top of that, she is seared into the consciousness of people of my age as she provided all the voices on that wonderful children's television series, The Flumps. Who is she? Let's welcome Gay Soper to the programme. Gay, welcome to Abbey 104 and Read on the Radio.
Thank you, Andrew. Lovely to be with you.
It is true. I was waiting outside the stage door and you were very kind enough to do an impression of Pootle. Let's leave that for a little bit later. Gay, you've done so much and we can only scratch the surface today, but where did it all come from? Are you from a performing family?
Well, yes, in an amateur sense. My mother and before her, my grandmother were wonderful amateur actresses. In those days, it wasn't possible to become a professional because it was rather regarded as immoral. They were regarded as not very nice human beings. So my grandmother was a fantastic actress, both dramatic and comedy. Then she used to do sort of like we now call it stand-up comic work. But then it was called doing a humorous monologue. And she used to perform for lots of local dinner and dances in the Croydon and Purley area. And she became quite well known in her own field. And so she was invited to be an early person on radio, which had just been invented, so roughly speaking, 1920. And my grandpa said to her over my dead body, "Does a wife of mine do a thing like that?" So she couldn't do that. And then my mother wanted also to do it. I sent her photograph up to this company that was looking for dancers for some kind of equivalent, English equivalent of the Busby Barclays shows. And they said, "Yes, we'd like to see you." And on the morning when she was due to come up to London for her audition, she had a filthy cold and she felt so unwell, she didn't go. And I'm sure, really, she was just scared out of her mind. And of course, she never, ever risked it again. So she carried on acting in the amateur world, as did my grandmother. And so that's where it comes from.
Your grandmother could have been an original Joyce Grenfell.
She could. She was brilliant.
It's funny and interesting and frustrating, really, how things were then. But times have changed. And I'm guessing when you came to show your interest in performance, although there were some obstacles in your way, did you find it easier than your parents and your grandparents had?
Yes, absolutely. Well, for a start, they were right behind me. They were so, apparently, even when I was born, I was actually christened Maureen Gay. And then, well, not many people know that, though everyone does now. I was called Maureen Gay, and I was very fat and round and jolly, and my grandmother was very ill, and I used to be taken upstairs to sit on her bed and laugh a lot. And my grandmother said to my mother, "That child is definitely not called Maureen. She definitely is gay." And so that's how that began. And so they were right from the beginning. They said, "Wouldn't it be wonderful if she became an actress?" And when I was six, I think I must have seen in one of the amateur productions. And I just thought, yep, that's what I'm going to do. My mother was playing a very dramatic role and she wasn't anything like my mum in real life. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. And I was so in awe of that. I thought, right, this is what I'm going to spend my life doing. And so I had this support and encouragement all the time because I was actually a very shy child. As I'm sure you found many performers have told you, they were actually terribly shy. And being somebody else really helps you in your confidence as a human being. It's just marvellous. So, I had very, very little difficulty, really. I I did classes in drama and poetry, and I used to win medals all through my childhood. And then I went and auditioned for drama school, and I got into Lambda. And so I went there straight from finishing my A levels. So I just turned 17 when I went to Lambda. And it was only a 2-year course, so I was already working by the time I was 19.
And you were at Lambda with some people who've gone on to be even bigger names than yourself.
Oh, absolutely, yes. In my class, Martin Shaw and Brian Cox were the two. And then the year below us were Leslie Joseph and Maureen Lipman and Sam Kelly. I'm sure some others as well, which don't spring to mind at this moment.
So when you came out of Lambda, where did you initially head for? Where were the bright lights that Gay went to?
Well, I was the first person in my class to get a job. So I left Lambda a few weeks before the end of our final term to go and understudy the role of Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady, which at that point was touring the UK. It was the production that had been at Drury Lane, but it had been on tour already for 2 years by the time I joined it, which was in 1965. And I went on and played Eliza only 10 weeks out of leaving Lambda, so just before I turned 20. But I was in the show all the time anyway. I was, one of the dancers and singers, and I had one small line in towards the end of Act Two as the maid who brings, I think she brings Eliza Doolittle in. Oh no, she says, the maid curtsies and says, "The tea is ready, ma'am." So I had to say that was my first little line, professionally spoken.
Then, of course, in 1971, you were brought into the very original cast of Godspell when that show was being created. When you're in a production that is in its creation stage, do you, as a actor, get a chance to develop the character perhaps in a different way to the writer, or does it depend on the composer's views?
No, I think you do, if you're the first cast. Of course, it had been on in America. It was on off Broadway. So, strictly speaking, I wasn't the originator. But in any case, yes, we were very much encouraged to be unique in ourselves because, as it was created in America, there were lots of references that didn't mean a thing to British people. So we had to turn some of the comedy scenes, clips from TV commercials or whatever, or political voices, or when I had to do the Tale of the Good Samaritan, I chose to do it in a Morningside accent. It meant nothing to Stephen Schwartz, who wrote the music. He couldn't understand why everybody laughed, but everyone loves a Morningside accent because it's so terribly rather upper class and grand. And so, yes, I think everyone in the cast absolutely made it their own.
We've reached the 70s. As I said at the beginning, there are so many things we could talk about, but I think I'm going to be lynched by our listeners if I don't ask you about the Flumps. Now, this is a complete change from being on the theatre to suddenly going into a recording studio and effectively narrating.
Well, I mean, I think all actors would say that they like to do as broad a spectrum of work as they possibly can. And I was already a very, very busy voiceover artist making radio commercials voices and the voice on television commercials. And so I'd already done a lot of recording in that sense. And the reason I got the Flumps was because it was originally going to be, they'd asked June Whitfield to do it, and who was with my agent. And June couldn't do it. I think she was busy. And so they said to my agent, "Have you got anyone else who you think would be any good at it?" And my agent said, "Yes, I think you should try one of my other clients, Gay Soper." So I went along and did the interview for it. And I've always done voices and accents. It's one of the things I like doing best. So they said, "Okay, we'll find a voice for these characters. We don't want it to be RP, as people now call it. We used to call it standard English. But anyway, they said, we don't want that, whatever happens. So find an accent. So I tried it in about four different accents, and they decided to go for a very gentle, soft sort of northern accent, rather nebulous northern accent, really, not terribly specific. And so that's how it happened, and I absolutely loved doing it. And in fact, I think if I've got this right, I was actually pregnant at the time, so I couldn't be doing stage shows anyway. So it was perfect. Go into the studio, sit down at the desk with the, microphone there, and nobody could see that I'd got a tummy getting bigger and bigger.
And you developed each of the characters' voices yourself then. You were given that freedom.
It was just pure invention. Obviously looked at the script and read what did this character say, how would they sound. So, Mother Flump is obviously particularly warm and motherly and sensible. And Father was a little bit grumpy. And Grandfather was a bit ditzy and played his flumpet and thought everyone had forgotten his birthday. Which was just, I mean, I loved doing it because it was so sad because he had this little song, and no one's remembered my birthday. Nobody's remembered it at all. And it's sort of quite a sort of tragic song. I loved doing that. And then there was a Keep Fit episode, but it was a very funny Keep Fit song. But yeah, so yes, I did develop the car. I mean, they were all sort of stereotypical, really. So the little girl, in those days it was before the Spice Girls arrived and changed everything, but this little girl was, she was called Posy, and she had a bow in her head, and she was very, very sweet, and not at all feisty. And then, of course, there was Pooter. Of course, Pooter was the baby, and I modelled him on Julie Covington, who I'd done Godspell with, was always doing funny voices herself in the dressing room. And she was often doing this kind of baby voice like that. And I thought it was very sweet. So I adopted that for Poodle.
We have got so much we can talk about. What I wanted to talk about next was your role as Madame Thénardier in Les Mis, but also the fact that you then carried that on to the international cast recording, which back in its day was a boxed set of four LPs. Remember those? I wondered, did your recording of the box set come before your role, or was it as a result of your role?
Afterward, yes, no, we were already in the show and recorded it during the run. So we were in the
Okay.
studio all day and then doing the show at night. That cast, though, was not the full cast of the British cast at that time. It was an international cast. So I think Jean Valjean was from the LA cast, and then I think Eponine was from Japan. I think someone else was from Australia. They were from literally all round the world.
If I remember rightly, Javert was Philippe Quast, who's been on this very program
Oh,
himself.
yes, I think it was Philip, yes.
How did that role come about then? Because obviously you've got this history of performance in the West End, but Madame Thénardier is a very specific character, isn't she?
Yes, now I had never seen Les Mis. In fact, to be brutally honest, I never wanted to see it. Anyway, my agent called me and said, they want to see you for Les Mis. And I said, what? 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 Who? Me? And I said, well, what's this character in? Anyway, so they sent me the music to learn. And as I'd never seen the show and I'd never listened to any recordings of it, I found it bizarre music to learn, not having heard it before. So I had to go to my rehearsal pianist that I used to regularly see and say, how on earth do I do this? How does it go? And so he rehearsed me in it. I did about two or three sessions with him before the audition, because I never would have managed it otherwise. So, again, it was putting on a voice, if you like, because, it's a player really rough like that. And so it was another fun character to do, really.
And that is the essence of the roles you love to play, isn't it? People that you can really get into and just have some fun doing it, even if it's reasonably serious character.
Yes, well, it's. I think that's the thrill of being an actor altogether, really, is that you get inside someone else's head, and you feel what they feel, you think what they think. It's an incredible experience to be somebody else. I absolutely love it. So, for me, it's all an adventure, and I like to do something that I haven't done before. Only yesterday, I went and did a class in film and television technique, and I had to learn a duologue as a very old man, a professor from a sci-fi series. And it was nothing like I'd done before, really. So I just found it a very interesting experience. And I just think that's why actors become actors, because we are so interested in other people and what makes them tick.
What one bit of advice would you give to a new modern day gay soaper listening to this who really wants to get into acting and emulate your path, as it were?
I don't know, because I think it probably is different nowadays. Obviously, you've got to go to drama school. I mean, there's just no question about that. There are some people who get by without it, but it's a massive help, and a very concentrated training. The discipline, it depends, some people don't want to do theatre these days. In my time, theatre was the main thing. Television and film were kind of extra. But now it's usually the other way around. But if you're going to do theatre, you have to have immense strength, because the stamina you need to do 8 shows a week, whether you're feeling ill or whether you're feeling great, and to keep the standard of what you're doing at the highest possible level you can every single show is the most important thing. So you've got to be terribly feet on the ground, down to earth, practical. You've got to keep fit and healthy.
What are you doing at the moment then, Gay? Have you got any productions in the offing?
No, not really. As I say, I did this course yesterday, and I'm probably going to do two or three more of those. It was just a very good sort of like a practice run. But I did something just after Christmas with a friend. We compiled an evening about Oscar Wilde. We did it was readings from some of his plays, some of the poetry, some of the stories, and talked about his life. So we're working on that at the moment. But as for anything else, not a thing. But you don't, there's not a lot around for people who get as old as I am, I'm afraid. It's just, there are very few of us who are actually still at it. But I did do a show last year. I did a musical called This Is My Family, at the Southwark Playhouse Elephant. And I really enjoyed doing that. That was a lady who's just developing dementia. And it was a good show, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. But I have no idea what's next.
Well, when you do, let us know. It's always a pleasure to have you back on the programme anytime, Gay. Can I thank you so much for your time? We're going to finish off in a moment with a little piece from that international recording of Les Mis, featuring yourself as Madame Thénardier and Barry James as the wonderful Monsieur Thénardier. Together, you make a wonderful couple. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great pleasure.
One day more, another day, another destiny, this never-ending road to Calvary. These men who seem to know my crime will surely come a second time. One day
I did
more.
Not live until today. How can I live when we are parted?
One day more.
Tomorrow you'll be worlds away. And yet with you my world has started.
schoolboys, they will wet themselves with blood. What's
your hanging luck? Catch them as they fall. Never know your luck when there's a brave moral. Here a little dip, there a little touch. Most of them are gone, so they won't miss much.
One, two, one, two, three.
Raise the flag of freedom high.
From the international cast recording of Les Miserables, One Day More, featuring, amongst others, our star on the programme today, Gay Soper.